as soon as I stopped worrying about wall of shame, what happens is they start listing on each person's license if they have a disciplinary action. So if, you know, we'll make this up that I have probation for being too mouthy, which if I was going to get probation, that's probably why I would get it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kate Walker. I'm a marriage and family therapist, practice owner, and professor of counselor education who took a passion for training the next generation of mental health providers and turned it into a multi six-figure business that designs the courses that teach mental health providers how to be clinical supervisors. Teaching graduate students and seasoned counselors, I learned about the fears. Fears about failing, quitting toxic work environments where you're seeing 80 clients a week, fears about starting a private practice, running out of money, getting in trouble by the licensing board, the IRS, you name it. I created the Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses community so mental health providers like you could have a step-by-step guide and learn actionable steps to achieve the security, freedom, and satisfaction of a counseling career you'll love. Look, you had the dream to become a mental health professional. You got the degree, you took the exams, you put in the time. Whatever your business is, a private practice, maybe you want to sell courses like I do, you're adding clinical supervision, you want to write a book or get paid to speak, whatever it is, you are too important to your community to lose to getting in trouble, giving up, going broke, and burning out. Are you ready to break through those fears once and for all? I thought so. Let's get to work.
Welcome to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses, where it's all about working smarter, not harder. And here's your host, Dr. Kate Walker,
who prefers to communicate through email rather than texting.
Talking to an attorney should not be this fun. I had so much fun interviewing attorney and LPC supervisor Laurel Clement, and she was amazing. She answered my questions, the group's questions, and she donated her time generously to our free webinar. So I am so excited to introduce this replay of the webinar that you're going to enjoy just as well. And we will make sure to put contact information for Laurel in the show notes. So without further ado, here's Laurel.
It's so fun to be here. I'm here for an hour and I would love any question that's on your mind.
Well, let's start with the ones in the poll. So I was going to have us do reactions, but since you guys can see the poll and you're filling it out, that's wonderful. So Laurel, let's start with records custodian questions. This is something that comes up with just everybody and also for supervisors who are supervising LPC associates in their own practice. And it's something that we don't often think about because we're just like, if we're in an agency, we're like, well, somebody else is taking care of that. I don't need to make sure my records are kept for 7 years. I don't need to make sure they're disposed of properly. I don't need to worry about a subpoena. Somebody somewhere else is dealing with all that. So talk to us about the records custodian question.
Yes, first of all, this has really changed. The custodian question or the records retention question has changed because when people were an LPC intern, as I was years ago, we did not have the authority to own records. And so what that meant was whoever employed the LPC intern was the one that actually kept the records. And then the LPC intern had to make sure that the records were available to them when they did need them for court. Interestingly enough, last February 22nd, I believe it was, when the board decided that LPC associates could have their own practice, it came to be that at that time, they could own the records and they could own the records in their own practice. So things really changed at that point. It really is very difficult, and it's something that a lot of people don't think about. For instance, in a counseling group, if you are an independent practitioner, you're a 1099, but you're using someone else's EHR, electronic platform, how are you going to get the records from them when you need those records? And so that is one issue that really needs to be dealt with in your contract, specifically with the 1099. Also, it needs to be included as an employee. How are you going to access that records? Because as we know, each one of the boards has obligated us to maintain or keep those records for 7 years for an adult, and then 5 years after the age of 18, which is, why don't they just say the age of 21, for a juvenile, for a minor. So we need to have access to the records. So it's really helpful if we put that information in our 1099, in our W-2 contract, or just an agreement that you're going to be working with somebody else's EHR, electronic record. Does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah. And so let me also say, like, for supervisors who are supervising, even an LPC associate who's not in their own practice, let's say that LPC associate's working for someone's bigger private practice or something like that. Is that something supervisors would want to get an eye on, to look at that contract to see if that LPC associate does in fact own the record or not, since that law passed?
Absolutely. So an LP supervisor would want to have two things in each one of their contracts with their supervisee. One is going to be that there is some awareness of where the records are. And there also needs to be some agreement with the LPC associate and also with the place where the associate works, that supervisor can come in and look at the records of that particular associate at any time if that's what that supervisor needs to do. There should be really a lot of transparency between supervisors and associates. And because oftentimes a third person is involved as far as counseling practice or an agency who employs that associate, everybody needs to be on the same page. So there definitely needs to be communication between all three parties prior to beginning the supervision contract.
So let's stay on the subject of records and next steps after a subpoena. You know, if you get a subpoena and you are the records custodian, and then if you get a subpoena and you're not the records custodian, what do those two things look like then?
Perfect. So first of all, subpoenas have to be served in person or else they're not valid. However, therapists can agree to get them differently. So for instance, therapists who regularly work forensic or court situations, like your custody evaluator, things like that, oftentimes they will agree to accept service by email. However, if you're a therapist that does not regularly do that kind of work, I recommend that you stick with the law, which is that you need to have in-person service. And that means you, not on your receptionist, not on one of your other therapists that you work with. So that's kind of the first thing I want to say about subpoenas. Secondly, if you get a subpoena, you need to really read it very, very closely. And I'll try to talk about this quickly. Oftentimes, and it really happens much more than you'd think it does, that the subpoena is incorrectly written, and that the lawyer is not going to get all the things they are thinking they are going to get. So that's why I say you need to read it very carefully. Let me give you some examples. First example, therapist was seeing two children, was subpoenaed to come to court. In the attachment for the deuces tecum that said that they were supposed to bring the records, it only listed one child. That means you have confidentiality with the records of the other child, not necessarily testimony, because both of them are probably covered under the testimony portion of the subpoena. But if they do not ask for both children's records, you do not bring both children's records. You do not try to help attorneys do their job, okay? Another example, I got one from a therapist, passed one on to me, and they wanted all their psychotherapy notes. That's all they asked for. It was a federal subpoena and asked for all the therapist's psychotherapy notes. Guess what? That therapist is not turning anything over, right? Why? We don't have psychotherapy notes in the state of Texas. Our board does not recognize psychotherapy notes. So another example can be, I had a therapist that was subpoenaed for any and all records over a particular client, and there was a date given. I'm going to make up a date, February 1st. And so the interesting thing is the client actually started seeing the therapist, let's say January 1st. So the therapist, you know, after talking to me, I said, absolutely, do not help the attorney and tell them, you know, what is it you need? Because you're basically breaking confidentiality because they have asked you in that subpoena for everything after a certain date. So that is what you're obligated to do. Now, as far as custodian of records, it may be that one person testifies and you might have to go get the records, from instance, from LifePath, because they're the ones that actually have possession of the records.
Okay. Next question. This was interesting because there's been a lot of talk, at least in when I see the social media threads, about professional will, right? So in our rules, it says we must have a records custodian, but somebody's going to handle the stuff after you die or you're too sick to handle it.
Right.
And they have duties, right? Can they just take it and throw it in the shredder? Like, what is their duty? What is a professional will going to do for you?
Okay. So let's go back to the BHEC rules. Okay. That is always my first deal. And do you know how many times I look at the rules over and over and over and over? Okay.
It used to be letter Z, right? You must have somebody take care of your records. 681.41Z.
It is now E8, I think. This is an old one, but it's the one I like because it's got all my highlights on it. It says the established plan for the custody and control of the client's mental health records. It really does not specify that you actually have to list somebody as their name. It really does not specify. I think the idea of having a professional will is a good idea. I really don't know how well it is going to work in reality, especially when a 28-year-old begins working and 7 years later, they're going to be at a different place. They're going to have different passwords. In theory, I think it's a good idea. So they really do not ask for a specific name. However, that's what people commonly do. Some people really prefer a legal, binding, formatted document. I have the example of a professional will on my website, laurelclement.com, under important forms and documents. I have several documents that are very helpful. Yeah, I have 611-008 in there, 611-0045, which are the most commonly used record request statutes. You can just go to my website and download the document instead of trying to mess with.
Well, and I highly, if you're a Facebooker, follow Laurel's Facebook page, because I know the past couple of days, she has been going through the definition of treatment plan, psychology, social work, MFT, LPC, and it's not the same, y'all. And so we think we know and we don't. And sometimes what we think we know is anecdotal. It's not actually encoded. And so Laurel, that's just kind of typical of what she posts, which I love. And it's fun because I sometimes I see your post, Laurel, and I'm like, Ah, I kind of knew that. Okay, I'm not crazy. It doesn't really specify.
Well, and I think that one of the important things I want to say is I don't think I know more than anyone else there. I just have a specific area that I cover, and I'm grateful that I'm able to reach out to a bunch of people and share my knowledge with them. You know, good thing I don't get questions about, you know, EMDR, because I would not know anything about it. So
you are very generous with your knowledge, and I appreciate you.
Well, yeah, I'm happy to help.
All right, let's move to the next questions hot off the press, and is actually professional will had the most votes. Interesting. 1099 versus W-2. Let's jump in there. That's a good one.
So that is something I post on my page every once in a while. It is definitely a hot issue. Texas Workforce Commission actually has a really good page about this. So it's Texas Workforce Commission. And if you just Google 1099 versus W-2, they will take you to that page. So they have certain things that definitely assist. One thing they have is a downloadable form, which is 20 tips to look at to help define whether a person should be a 1099 or whether they should be a W-2. This is a very significant issue financially. And why do I say that? Because if a counseling group is calling somebody a 1099 and they really should be a W-2, then the IRS is really going to get mad, okay? Who wants the IRS not mad at them? Not me. And what the IRS will do is make you pay the unemployment tax or pay the taxes for the 1099 persons that you should have paid. So, for instance, let's just say easy numbers, self-employment tax, 30%. If you work for somebody, the business should be paying 15% and you pay 15% as the employee. And so the IRS really doesn't like it when the wrong person is paying their taxes. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
So I encourage y'all, if you have any question at all, to look at that website page. It actually also has a way to report somebody anonymously who is mischaracterizing a person that works with them. So they make it pretty darn easy to let IRS know what's going on.
Excellent. Another classification question, LLC, PLLC, and I'll just do those two. So what do we have to do in Texas, Laurel?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to put in the chat the business attorney that I recommend.
Awesome. Thank you.
That he is awesome. When I have business questions, this is who I write or email or call. And, you know, my understanding is it needs to be a PLLC. I encourage anybody who is starting a business with a corporate formation, contact Jeff, talk to him about it. I realize that some people say, hey, it's not that hard to start your, you know, corporate formation. I wouldn't even do it myself. I had another attorney start my corporate formation years ago. So I really think it's a good use of funds. And also somebody can give you some education, knowledgeable education about what the courts are doing with, you know, stuff you're interested in. So, and there's also an employment attorney at Sheaf and Stone if you have some employment questions.
All right. Professional insurance. Now, I grabbed that right off the Facebook page. So I'm going to assume that that's not like trip and fall insurance. I'm going to assume that that is malpractice insurance. Should we have it? I'm assuming that's what the question is, but go and pop it in the chat if that's something that
you're curious about, if you were the one who thought professional insurance was a good question, clarify it in the chat if you would. But Laurel, what do you think about professional insurance?
Well, I mean, my gosh, for as cheap as it is for therapists, I mean, I think yes. And, you know, the reason it's so cheap, though, is that therapists don't get sued. Really, we don't get sued. I realize that a lot of people have that fear, that concern. It does happen. I'm not suggesting people, you know, act without caution about some issues. However, the reason why our malpractice insurance as a therapist is so cheap is because people don't get sued. Your real concern as a therapist should be BHAC. Okay, that's what your real concern should be. It's not being sued. So there are a couple of insurance companies out there. CPH, for instance, when I do a case with CPH, they will pay me directly and they pay more dollars. HPSO, when you get a complaint, they really don't have a good plan that helps you because they're not going to pay you until the whole case is over, and they will reimburse you at that point. And so it's important for you to just look at those different plans to figure that out. I'm not advocating for one or the other. I'm just saying be aware of, you know, your benefits and the cost and kind of figure out what works for you. I'm definitely not advocating one more than the other.
All right, now I'm going to the chat, y'all. So if you want to put your questions in there, let me start with Mary Elisa Pena. She says, any guidance on LPCs employed with a district providing counseling to a set group of students on a weekly basis?
Ooh, okay. Well, that is really difficult because first of all, you're in an administration and your people you work for are not licensed therapists. Anytime that happens, there's disconnect or communication issues about what you as a therapist are required to do. So that's definitely going to be your first obstacle or issue to deal with.
Mary Lisa, is there something in particular that you want to say, anything more than that?
Oh, okay. Group of students on a weekly basis. So, you know, the issue about working in a school is you've got FERPA to deal with as well as your board rules. So you just got another layer on top of that. I really encourage someone who works in a school district for joining TCA's school counselor program. What do you call it? Section?
Division.
Yes. Chapter. Division. Yes, thank you. I mean, I've talked at that group before. So there are some issues to be aware of if you're in the school setting with different students. One of the things you need to be aware of are the parents signing something with all the, you know, 3,000 things I have to sign at the beginning of the school that actually is a consent for counseling. That's one of the things you need to know. I actually, for 3 years, I was an independent contractor for Dallas Independent School District. I saw only special ed students for 3 years, and it was in West Dallas, which is a very poor part of Dallas, and it was such an enjoyable experience. But one of the things I can tell you is that it was part of the intake packet. And I don't know exactly if it was the intake packet for that facility I was in or the intake packet for the school. But it's important to be aware of whether the parents are actually signing something before they get to your door.
Okay, we have a question about insurance. If you are in a group, should you have your clinicians add your group to their insurance as additional insured?
I don't think they can do that because what they will do, if they get additional insurance, Jessica, I think that theirs will be for one person only. So you get an umbrella policy, which covers you, your business, the people that work with you, they get an individual policy that covers only them.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I don't believe they can get something that covers you.
The reason I'm asking is because I had someone have an individual policy and they did add it to theirs. And so I was like, oh, should that be something I should be doing or not? So I just wanted to ask.
No, okay. No. I mean, if you have an umbrella policy and they have an individual policy, that's more than enough.
Perfect. Thank you.
I mean, your umbrella policy is really more for trip and fall and, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. In reality, that's what that will come into help, you know, to be more helpful to you instead of being sued. But it does happen.
Thank you.
Of course.
Okay. So in Texas, what does a new business need to have? And I've seen this in threads before, you know, especially in the associate threads. I'll see something like, do I need a business license? How do I start a business in Texas? And my understanding is like, you know, you can open a lemonade stand. Like Texas is like business, go, right? So do you really have to have anything? And I'm looking at Sabrina Eads up here. What does a new business need outside of a PLLC? DBAs aren't required. And do you have to register? And so what are we missing here?
Well, so again, I encourage y'all to talk to Jeff Mullins. Part of getting a PLLC is that you are registered with the state. So yeah, if people want to find out about you, they can go to
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So Secretary of State, I like the Secretary of State because one of the things they do when an application for a business comes in is they look to see if anybody else has that name, which is pretty cool because it's like, how are you going to know if somebody else has that business name? So they just like go through all their files. I'm sure they have it on computer, but they just, you know, check out to make sure you can have that name. And then, you know, you have a special name nobody else has. So I encourage you to talk to Jeff Mullins and see what all is involved.
We had a retreat in April, the Get Shit Done retreat in Austin, and one of our participants was being sued by a great big company who said, hey, you have our name. And I don't even know if this great big company was originally in her state, like they had moved into the state. So it happens.
Right.
It's like
yeah.
Checking a domain name, right? So making sure that you have that.
Right. Yeah. The Secretary of State only checks Texas corporation.
Right. So good question. You're handling a subpoena for your associate. I don't think we have to, right? They're the boss of their own records. I mean, supervisors, we can help, we can accompany, we can guide, but we don't have to handle anything, right?
No. Yeah. Ever since last February, things have really changed as far as the involvement of the LPC associate and, you know, their ability to have their own records. So yeah, it's been a lot easier now.
Membership, membership. Why would anyone want to join a membership? Because you're sick and tired of trying to find great information that will help you start your career, grow a practice, stay out of trouble, and oh, by the way, not be boring and outdated. You already know I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand that people actually want to finish. But why should you have to pay for every single resource I offer? Let me introduce the Step It Up membership. Step It Up members have access to over 50 trainings on everything from preparing your accounts for tax season to using SEO to improve your Google rankings, writing a book, staying HIPAA compliant, to learning how to create a press kit if you want to start public speaking. You also get access to over 25 courses that you can use as continuing education and that meet the new Texas 50% from an approved provider rule. Are you a supervisor looking for a consultation group? Step It Up members get free tickets to the Texas Supervisor Coalition monthly live consultation group featuring great speakers and incredible up-to-the-minute information to keep your license safe. Feel overwhelmed by lots of choices and want an interactive training with a real live person? I've got you covered. Step It Up members get weekly live training with me every single week. And did I mention that Step It Uppers get a coupon for $100 off the 40-hour training to become an LPC or LMFT supervisor in Texas? Yeah, you get that too. You're the one working your butt off, sweating through the summer, corralling kids, and facing slumps in your client load. I want to help. All summer long, I'm offering a 50% discount on the annual and monthly plan for the Step It Up membership. No contracts, and if you don't like it, quit anytime you like, but you're gonna love it. You are too important to lose because you pay too much for online courses, you sat through expensive, boring live trainings, and you got suckered into long-term commitments with memberships that just didn't deliver. It's time to take the next step in your counseling career. And it's super easy to do. Just go to katewalkertraining.com/podcast. That's katewalkertraining.com/podcast. But you gotta act fast. This is going away as soon as the summer ends. So get the discount, get the resources, and take your practice to the next level. I'll see you on the inside.
All right, so Carrie has a good one here, and I do hear this a lot, and especially one of my battle cries is trying to get, you know, counseling into rural Texas. Let's get into rural Texas, underserved Texas. So for clients in foster care, must we obtain court paperwork verifying guardianship of foster parent? Not sure how to read this from the board since it mentions a client named in a court order, 681.41V. I'll let you look at that.
So years ago, I used to do a ton of CPS work. I'm assuming when you say in foster care that they are coming from CPS, and CPS will have a temporary managing conservatorship signed by a judge that allows that CPS to, you know, get counseling, medical attention, education, all those rights for the child. The foster care mom or dad should have that order and should be able to bring in that order. It's like a one-page duplicate order, at least in Dallas County it was. And so they just rip off the sheet and hand it to the CPS worker after the judge makes her ruling. So yes, there should be an order. You know, there are going to be times when you may have difficulty getting an order, and you'll just have to, you know, feel free to email me and I will help you with that situation.
And so I guess a follow-up would be then, if there's no order, then what?
You know, you'll have to make a decision. I remember when I was working for Dallas Independent School District, there was one child that the parents were AWOL, aunt was the one who had custody of the child, and there were no orders in place. And so there were no orders at all. It's not like you could invent orders, but you just have to do the best you can sometimes.
Okay. Question about PLLC again, and this is different. Amelia writes, I just set up my PLLC. Do I need to transfer and or set up my liability insurance, NPI, and or CAQH, et cetera, under my PLLC rather than just my name?
I wouldn't think so. Kate, what do you think?
Well, I know we see a lot of folks who forget to put their name and their license anywhere in their marketing, right? So that's what comes to mind for me. Like if you're going to have a name like achievebalance.org, right? You want to make sure your name is somewhere. This, I don't know. I think it would be up to your insurance company, right? Wouldn't they tell you like we're insuring you or we're insuring your company? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can answer that. What I can say is that if you do have a PLLC and an interesting creative name, you also need to list on your website your name. And it helps to list also your license number.
Just a little side note. Lots of people have wondered what happened to the wall of shame, you know, after BHEC took over and all that stuff. The court decision is actually next to each individual name.
Yeah. So, yeah. originally they took down the wall of shame. I emailed Daryl Spinks, who's the executive director, and I'm like, hey, no more wall of shame. Is that going to be for good? Daryl's like, yes. And then as soon as I stopped worrying about wall of shame, what happens is they start listing on each person's license if they have a disciplinary action. So if, you know, we'll make this up that I have probation for being too mouthy, which if I was going to get probation, that's probably why I would get it. So
I would make that into a trophy.
Yeah. So if you, you know, look up my name, Laurel Clement, which actually there's another Laurel Clement in, I think in Lubbock, I've never met. So shout out to another Laurel Clement. And if you look, you know, click on my license, there would be a PDF icon that says other documents, I think. And if you click on that icon, you can actually see the agreed order that was entered with BHEC. And if you agreed to it, it would be with your signature. If you didn't agree to it and it, you know, came about, then it would be an order. My understanding is that's going to follow you forever. So it's not exactly the wall of shame, but in a way, it's actually worse than the wall of shame.
Mm-hmm. Alberto wants to know, working in a residential setting with a mom with an 18-year-old with learning disabilities, diagnosis unknown and cannot be retrieved due to safety concerns for both parent and child, what would be necessary required to provide counseling if developmentally the 18-year-old is delayed? Who can consent? Is a POA necessary?
Perfect. Okay. Mom definitely needs to get a guardianship. This is really, you must be in a more rural area, whoever asked that question, because I think that Alberto, I think it's pounded into special ed classes when they're 17 and 18. The law requires a lot of stuff for special ed stuff. As I mentioned, I worked with special ed students for 3 years at Dallas Independent School District. So at the age of 16, they have to have informal gathering. They called it a hearing where it was like, let's talk about Johnny's future. And what we figure out is Johnny ever going to be able to be independent? Or is Johnny going to be a dependent person that will not be able to live on their own? And what they need to do is they start talking to him about getting a guardianship. The good news is that attorneys are provided for the guardian at the cost, basically, of the state or the county. So people who do not have a lot of money, they can do it. They can get that whole thing done. And it should not be a financial burden. So I would encourage Alberto maybe to contact TEA, Texas Education Agency. They have a very active special ed department, and they can certainly help with referrals, I believe, and they can also, if the mother of that particular person wanted to give them a call or just look up on the website or talk to the probate court. The probate court is the one who handles guardianship. And the probate court would be able to probably assist them or let them know, for instance, if they wanted to do it on their own, they could file the documents. Or if they wanted to hire an attorney for the parents, they could do that. The attorney for the guardian will be appointed and paid for by the court. Does that make sense, all of that? I hope I've helped you, Mr. Alberto.
Okay, let's go to the next one then. Is BHEC entertaining reciprocity? Well, unfortunately, BHEC doesn't have anything to do with reciprocity. It's a federal issue, and we could have gotten on board, and it didn't pass. It didn't get set to calendar, right?
It didn't even get to calendar. It was an unfortunate, I mean, as oftentimes happen in sessions, there's just one big issue or a couple of big issues that the legislature deals with, and sometimes other issues fall through the crack. And I think that's what happened. If the state of Texas wants to join the PAC, the counseling PAC, then that has to go through the legislature first. And the legislature won't meet again on just regular issues for another 2 years. It has a special session coming up for property taxes, but it won't meet again regarding these type of issues for 2 years.
So, yeah, too bad on that. Sabrina, I can't tell if this is a question or not, so I'm going to read it. I set up my PLLC, and there is something called an NPI-2 that you can get. I believe it's designed for the business specifically, not you as the provider. So your business can have an NPI. It's been many, many years since I got an NPI, so I see thumbs up, so I'm guessing that's good. Okay, we've got one. If one reports a fellow licensee to the board, is my information held in confidentiality throughout the duration of the investigation of the complaint? Excellent question.
Yes, such a good question. I do get that, Crystal. I do get that question sometimes. If you report it anonymously, they're not going to know that it's you who made the report. If you make a report and you have to identify yourself and say, you know, my therapist did this, or the therapist that works for me did this, then yes, they will know your name. They will know who made the report. You will be called the complainant in the report. They will get a copy of what you send to the board as far as the complaint form. The old LPC board used to be a lot better about sharing stuff with me. I used to get everything. And the LCDC board still does that. They give me everything. But now BHEC only gives me some stuff, which
when you're defending someone, they don't give you all the information?
They don't. It's a little bit harder on me. Good news is if somebody has a BHEC license and an LCDC license, I can go do and get all the records from LCDC that are used in the BHEC, but that doesn't always happen. So BHEC has made it a little bit more difficult in that way.
So LCDC, y'all, is not in BHEC.
Mm-mm. It's still over in Health and Human Services, yep. As is the provider of sexual offender treatment.
Okay. All right. Is BHEC okay with a therapist providing telehealth services from another state where they are also licensed in? Well, they don't speak to it, so.
Well,
so. No news is good news, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, example, a person lives in Washington, has a Washington and a Texas license. And when I say Washington, I mean Washington State. You know, yes, you can practice from one state that you're licensed in to another state that you're licensed in. Absolutely.
And I notice you're not saying if you're not licensed in the state that you're sitting in. So there's still the state you're sitting in, whether you're in your camper or your hotel room, still might have a little bit of say-so there.
Yes.
So it's good to do due diligence wherever your feet are.
Right.
Before you start counseling.
Right. Because where your feet are, you need to check what their rules and their laws are as far as letting you do counseling. Now, I can tell you, I think it's Brazil doesn't have any laws regarding LPCs. So feel free to go to vacation in Brazil and, you know, continue doing your counseling and you'll be fine. So I am not going to Brazil anytime soon. Let me assure you of that.
Those of you who are Facebookers, there are some good groups out there. I know there's the Traveling Therapists, there's Online Therapists of Texas, and they've got some good information. At least I think it's good. It seems to be very up to date. So I liked it. Will the state of Texas get Medicare applications available so that LPCs can accept Medicare as on January 1st, 2024? Is that, I forgot about that. Is that a thing?
I am not exactly sure, but I can almost guarantee you that if there are forms to be made available, they will be made available on December 29th at about 3 p.m. So They're not going to be helping us. Get ready. It's kind of like the No Surprises Act, where it was just like, boom, you know, and everybody was like, what is going on? So, yeah.
Oh, you know what? Since you mentioned that, I got asked that question today. So I'm going to slide in my question. The No Surprises Act is a federal law that applies to us. And so we must somehow meet the challenge of No Surprises Act, correct?
Yes. The law qualifies everything, right? Mm-hmm. I believe it's the insurance department in Texas that actually enforces the No Surprises Act for people in Texas. I believe that's correct. Mm-hmm. I had a webinar on it, you know, last January when it took place. And believe me, I had researched it up and down. And I actually checked in with the Department of Insurance and they said, no, we've never, you know, that's not something we plan on doing, is really enforcing that a great deal. Actually, earlier this week, posted an article from American Psychological Association about how therapists can incorporate No Surprises Act into their practice. Because as we know, No Surprises Act does not make a lot of sense for therapists. It is pretty ridiculous. Now, I think it is a super law when it comes to, you know, Johnny having his tonsils removed and mom makes sure the hospital is in network and the pediatrician's in network. And then mom gets this huge bill from the anesthetist that, you know, the anesthetist wasn't in the plan. I mean, I think that's really, really unfair to a family that's really trying to watch their pennies and trying to be good stewards of their kids' money, of the family's money. So I think it has really important implications in that type of situation. However, it just really, it's like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. And there, I think I also made a post last week about the lawsuits that continue to be filed over the No Surprises Act. Wow. And the American Medical Association has several lawsuits going on nationwide. And one of the interesting things is one of the lawsuits is actually in Tyler. Maybe if somebody who's in Tyler hears a little bit about it, maybe they'll let me know, because there are nationwide cases. And I think it's so funny that one's in Tyler. So
Jessica says, Laurel, I remember you saying at another webinar that BHEC has said they won't take away your license for NSA. Is this still correct?
What BHEC has said is they do not have jurisdiction over that issue, which means no, they are not going to entertain anything that has to do with the No Surprises Act. Correct.
Oh, NSA. Okay. Many things went through my head. I'm like, National Security Agency. What?
I know. I think we're being bugged right now.
Oh, definitely. 100%. Oh, here's one. Is there anything restricting supervisors from the location from which they are providing supervision?
Oh, such a good question. Yes, that has changed. And I can remember it used to be that the supervision had to be 50% face-to-face, okay? And then that changed. But let me tell you, I actually, when it was 50%, had to sit down with a complaint. I got a complaint, or when I say I got, it means the therapist got it and hired me. And one of the issues was what percentage was actually in person and what percentage was by telehealth. And I actually had to sit down with my little calculator. Yeah. So I had to sit down and figure out, you know, what 50% was. And I actually think my client was within the 50%. That has now changed. And I think it's a really good thing, because I think people in rural areas have more of an option about who they can use as a supervisor. For instance, if they are an RPT or they're, you know, practicing to be an RPT, going to school to be an RPT, they can find an RPT supervisor that's somewhere in the state and they can still use them. So that's been a really, really good change for everybody.
So the location of the virtual supervision I'm providing need not be from within the state of Texas if that's where I'm licensed. So Sarah's wondered if her feet determine where she's supervising or her, is this another one she needs to check with Oklahoma or Louisiana or wherever she is?
No, because what she's talking about is associates. And so I'm worried about the associates is what I'm thinking about. I mean, if you're traveling, that's one thing. If you're actually living out of state, you know, the problem or the issue that BHEC is understandably concerned with is, are you receiving Texas-specific supervision? Which I think is hilarious because you may have noticed that BHEC removed the requirement for Texas-specific ethics from the LPC rules.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so interesting because I really felt like they were important. I felt like it was important, but I actually emailed Daryl Spinks about that. And he said that the other rules do not have a Texas specific requirement and they're really trying to align the rules a bit more. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, straight up 6 o'clock. Laurel, thank you.
Thank you so very much. Thank you. And y'all, please follow my Facebook page. And I'm, you know, here to help. I am very passionate about therapy, counseling, and I'm also passionate about helping y'all because, you know, you do such great work. So thank you.
And she'll go toe-to-toe. She'll go toe-to-toe with them. She won't come back down. All right, everybody, you know the drill. Please just give us a couple of weeks to get everything together. Thank you all again so much. Keep doing wonderful things. Keep serving your people. I will see you soon.
All right. Bye, Kate.
Hey, badasses. We can all agree that counselors want a path to a successful counseling career, but that means you have to find quality training. That's not even the real barrier. The real problem is a lot of information can be overwhelming and you, my badass, are busy. So you're probably asking yourself, how can I improve my practice while still caring for people? How do I grow my skill set, become a supervisor, without losing my work-life balance? How do I find quality training that won't cost too much time and money? Bottom line? Counselors who want a successful counseling career value the goal of growing their skill set and even becoming a supervisor, but at the same time struggle with finding time to attend quality courses. Counselors can't overcome this barrier because so many times courses with tempting titles overpromise and underperform. Let me ask you something. What if there were courses that delivered exactly what they promised, that didn't take a lot of time, and didn't break the bank? That's exactly the kind of course we design at Kate Walker Training. I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand. And we have so many to choose from. If you're asking yourself, where do I go if I want to sustain my practice and grow my marketing presence? Well, check out the Step It Up membership. What do you do if you're ready to pay it forward and add streams of income? Well, check out the supervisor training. See if you're eligible. If you're looking for an experience that's more hands-on, keep an eye out for open enrollment for Badass Basics and our exclusive mastermind groups.
Dr. Kate Walker, thank you so much for listening to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses. Thank you to Ridgely Walker for her lovely voiceovers at our introduction. And do me a favor, when you get a second, please like, share, and subscribe, and write us a review.
That's really how we get picked up by other RSS feeds, and we get this information out to the mental health badasses who need it. Thanks again, and keep saving the world with excellent therapy.